Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As many of the nation's governors grapple with multi-billion dollar state budget shortfalls, some are asking local governments to reduce their dependence on state revenues by downsizing and eliminating redundancies. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels has called for the elimination of townships. Similar calls have been made in Ohio, where plans are afoot in the General Assembly to end the estate tax, a critical funding source for townships. Governor Kasich has turned the conversation to a form of regionalism where cities and counties, villages and townships begin to merge or share operations. Coming up at the end of the hour, we'll get into that House Bill 3, the proposed repeal of the Ohio estate tax, with one of the sponsors of that bill, Representative Jay Hattinger of Newark, and also Ohio Municipal League Deputy Director John Mahoney. So you can stay with us for that. For now, joining us to talk about the pros and cons of regionalization and consolidation is Matt DeTempo. Matt is the Executive Director of the Ohio Township Association. Welcome to the program, Matt.
Thanks, Ann.
Also with us is LaVia Brockman. She's a senior fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings Institute. She is the chief architect of the Brookings Greater Ohio Restoring Prosperity to Ohio Initiative, which she continues to direct and manage. Welcome to the show, LaVia.
Thanks very much, Ann.
LaVia, in your report, you talk about restoring in the report, Restoring Prosperity to Ohio Initiative, you write about the metropolitan scale at which the modern economy now operates. How does that relate to the need for changes in how state and local governments organize themselves?
Well, it's interesting. In our report, we noted that Ohio has, as we know, 7 to 8 strong metropolitan areas. And they're really now internationally the vehicle for economic growth and change. And so in Ohio, we have the opportunity to leverage our metropolitan areas in ways that maybe other states don't. But right now, because we have such a proliferation of local governments, we're still a little bit fragmented. But operating at a metro scale is really a way to be very strong economically.
You say that in a metropolitan orientation, state investments aren't based on 20th century political subdivisions getting their share, but on what makes sense. So what do you mean by that, that it's not divvied up according to political subdivisions?
Well, there are a couple things. Ohio has had a history of competing within regions. A lot of times our local governments compete with each other for resources. They compete with each other for new industry. And so we're advocating that there be an acknowledgement that we're much stronger if we operate together. In the past, there has been a tendency for the state to allocate resources by local government, but if we climate of fiscal challenge, we need to kind of re-examine how we allocate state funds.
Matt, the idea of regionalism and consolidation and that sort of thing is not a new idea. It's been kind of bubbling around at the edges in Ohio for probably 20 years now. Townships are the smallest legal subdivision in the state that the state recognizes as a taxing authority. And that, what are the threats to townships, and why is it perceived as a threat to consolidate and regionalize?
Well, when you talk about consolidation, obviously you're talking about eliminating local government entities, and it's the view of the Ohio Township Association that having small, nimble local government entities isn't inefficient, it's less bureaucratic. Township form of government is very responsive to the people they serve. It's small communities, it's 3 locally elected trustees and a locally elected fiscal officer. And, they provide a menu of services that their locale wants, and that varies, from locale to locale. So rather than being, inefficient, it allows the services to be tailored and to the needs of the community. And if they're not meeting the needs of the community, they're voted out of office.
What about the idea of regionalism then? Keeping that political subdivision, the township, but coordinating more with your neighbors and with the region?
Well, we're all for that. I think that makes more sense than, talking about abolishing political subdivisions, because that would be, a war. We're all for cooperation and collaboration. you know, not competing for scarce resources. But and there's a lot of that that goes on, you know, already locally. It doesn't require a mandate from Columbus to do it, but you know, there are townships that share facilities with villages and municipalities or other townships. They create joint districts like fire districts, so they share services that way. So there's a lot of collaboration that goes on already. Probably could be more, and you know, we're all for that.
Livia, getting back to the issue of efficiencies, Matt makes the point that, well, when you're smaller government, it can be more efficient. And there is a huge argument against, in fact, lots of people are opposed to the growing, the increasing nature of government. Doesn't this idea of what you're talking about, the big regionalism and the regional governments, make it a bigger government, not a more responsive government?
Well, I think we have to parse the issues a little bit here. First, I think I would agree with Matt that that we as a state need to look at the advantages of shared services, partnerships, and that's true across the board, whether it's between townships or municipalities. There's a lot of duplication of services right now. Ohio, unfortunately, has not grown at the same population rate as the rest of the country. We've only grown about 2%, and many of our metro areas have lost population. So that leaves much higher costs and lower revenues for many of our municipalities. So we really do need to look at how to decrease the burden. So I think that's the efficiencies that we're looking at. And the, you know, operating as metro areas can happen in many ways. And there can be voluntary cooperation that's both at the local level, whether it's fire protection, emergency management, police, those kinds of services, while at a more mega level or meta level, we can be doing regional economic development. So there's really two things I think we're talking about. One is reducing costs through shared services. The other is promoting cooperation so we can do better regional economic development.
Is consolidating or eliminating, as Matt put it, something like the township in Ohio and like the governor in Wisconsin has suggested, eliminating the township, is that something that you advocate?
Well, I think that we need to look to do things incrementally. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of support for local control and local, you know, local government in Ohio. The problem is, and it's not just a township issue, we have an excess of local governments. And we just have to figure out what the right level and number is. But clearly, we are not fiscally able to support what we have now. I mean, we have 13 more local governments per county than the national average. 88% of states have fewer governments per 100 square miles than we do. I mean, there's a lot of comparative data to show that unless we change, we're going to undercut our economic competitiveness. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we advocate for the abolition of townships, but we do advocate for looking at a change in the structure of things.
Matt, what is the evolution of townships? Where did they come from? Why was that kind of political subdivision developed in the first place?
Well, they actually predate the existence of Ohio as a state. They were created by the Ordinance of 1785. Which was written by the same people that gave us the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And we like to think those people knew a thing or two about governing. But and they were a way of divvying up land grants. You know, and if you read, you know, Thomas Jefferson wrote a lot about townships, and his view was if the idea of a republic worked for a nation, you know, the same kind of representative democracy could work at the local level. And so he was a big advocate of them. And so when the land grants were done by Congress for the area that's now Ohio, they also created this ordinance to create – typically they were 5 or 6 square mile areas that became townships. Today we have 1,308 townships in Ohio, and that number has held fairly steady over the years. I mean, there's been some reduction. We've lost some townships as a result of mergers with other townships or as a result of municipal annexation. But, you know, the numbers held fairly steady. You know, today they operate on a shoestring budget. You know, they get some money from the state through the local government fund. They get a lot of their money from property tax. And if you even look at how property tax is divvied up, you know, in a typical scenario, you know, the local school district will get twice what the township gets in property tax revenue. And so today, these entities, really on shoestring budgets, are providing, you know, basic services, road maintenance, snow plowing, chipping, sealing of roads, police, fire. They maintain cemeteries. They maintain parks in the township. So it's, you know, grassroots government performing basic services and really doing it in an incredibly cost-effective way in Ohio.
I would ask, though, a couple things. One, and you would know a lot more, Matt, than I do about the range of different kinds of townships, but I do know that they range from quite large to a township like Westchester outside Cincinnati to some very small ones, you know, many that are under
1,000. Geographically large or in population?
I mean population.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wonder if there's an opportunity to treat some of those differently as a result.
Well, they do vary in size. I mean, the largest is, you know, there are some large townships down around Cincinnati, and, you know, Westchester has a population in excess of 60,000 people. We have townships that range down to as small as having hundreds of residents. But I guess what I would say, if you look at Ohio law, they're really not mandated to do a lot of things, townships. But they offer a menu of services, and again, I think it's already tailored, you know, where, you know, the large townships, you know, have police, fire, road crews, parks and rec, senior citizen services, waste disposal, you know, you name it. A smaller one may be limited to, you know, maintaining the roads and relying on the county sheriff for law enforcement.
And at the same time, a larger township population-wise is probably located closer to a large metropolitan area, say like Sharon Township and the city of Worthington, and the city of Worthington's police department's located on one street, and two streets over is the Sharon Township Police Department and township offices. Is there overlap more often in those cases?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, you know, departments like that, you know, work cooperatively together. You know, they have mutual response agreements, you know, shared services things. And again, it's what it boils down to is, are the people in Sharon Township willing to pay to have a police department? They're not required to, but sort of as a quality of life issue, the local residents in that community have decided, you know what, I'm willing to pay in property taxes, and I'm willing to pass a voted tax levy to pay for that because I value that service.
Okay. We have to take a break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Matt DeTemple of the Ohio Township Association and also Livia Brockman of the Greater Ohio Policy Center, where she's executive director. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Hear All Sides with Ann Fisher, Fresh Air, On Point, and Talk of the Nation on 89.7 FM. Join us for news all day, every day on 89.7 or streaming at WOSU.org.
And you can discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher online at WOSU.org/allsides. You can listen to new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. You can also find All Sides on Facebook and Twitter, subscribe to podcasts, and preview upcoming programs. Discover more about WOSU and All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/allsides. 29 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, a high of 31. Clouds tonight and a low of 19 degrees, and then snow for Thursday. A winter weather advisory remains in effect throughout the day. On Thursday, we could see 3 inches of snow. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the issue, the pros and cons of regionalization and consolidation with Matt DeTemple. Matt is the executive director of the Ohio Township Association. Also with us is Livia Brockman. She's a senior fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings Institute. She's the chief architect of the Brookings Greater Ohio Restoring Prosperity to Ohio Initiative, which she continues to direct and manage. Livia, you wanted to follow up on something from...
the discussion about the different types and sizes of township, and a couple things on that. Number one, with townships of that small size, and you know, it's a concern also with other kinds of small local government. Are we imposing a structure that where the costs are shared by too few people? So your per capita costs of another government infrastructure would seem to be kind of an overload when there are services that could be more efficiently shared among a larger number. And the other point I wanted to make was townships are differently set up than cities and, for instance, do not impose an income tax. And has occurred to us that that kind of puts them on a different playing field than, for instance, cities, and may attract folks to move to them, and perhaps it may be contributing to sort of duplication of infrastructure, emptying out of our cities. And I just wonder sort of what the thinking is these days with the fiscal crisis going on.
Matt?
Well, a couple of points there. One, you know, as I mentioned earlier, townships, especially small ones, do this work on a shoestring budget. And just to give you a couple of examples, in Jefferson Township in Franklin County, a house there would pay over $2,500 in property taxes in 2009.
To the township?
No.
Okay.
To the township, of that $2,500, they would pay $292. Small fraction. And for that, they get road maintenance, fire, emergency medical services, parks, cemeteries, and zoning. So from our perspective, when you talk about consolidating or regionalizing, you're creating a bigger entity. And I think studies have shown that the costs of doing business go up. The labor costs are going to go up. It's more likely that people are going to be organized in a union. You're going to be paying union scale wages. It becomes more bureaucratic and more expensive. There were a lot of studies have been done recently about this, and studies in Pennsylvania and New York and Michigan have concluded that consolidation isn't the road, to more efficiency. As far as small townships, in some respects, they're the only game in town out there. When you get into rural Ohio, that is really the only government that's out there.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join our conversation about the pros and cons of regionalization and consolidation with Matt DeTemple of the Ohio Township Association, and also Livia Brockman, senior fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings Institute. Livia?
Yeah, I was want to just follow up with one other thought, which is, there are a number of things that townships, while they're not mandated to do a lot, that actually works in their favor often, in that townships do not have to maintain state routes that go through them, mm-hmm. whereas cities do. And that's a really huge expense that's imposed on cities that's not imposed on townships. So in a way, although, we're the point that Matt makes about townships taking care of, these essential services, they're sort of off the hook to do other things that like state, maintaining state routes that other places are. So it's hard. We're a little bit comparing apples and oranges here.
Well, I would imagine you're comparing several different fruits, because not only are you talking about populations, you're talking about property values and how much revenue can be generated from any given piece of property. And that can vary and is not necessarily, it can be correlative, but it isn't necessarily with the populations either.
Yeah. Right. But on the issue of roads, there are township roads. And if you actually look at the data, townships maintain more miles of roads than any other governmental entity in Ohio. Townships maintain over 41,000 miles of roads in Ohio. The Legislative Service Commission will tell you, they've said this in some of their reports, that road maintenance falls to local government entities, and it falls most heavily on townships. Just to give you some comparison, cities and villages maintain about 31,000 miles of roads, which is 10,000 less than townships. Counties about 29,000, and the state maintains a little over 19,000. So we maintain the most road miles.
Andy from Delaware County, you're on the show. Welcome.
Hi, how are you? I've lived in townships. I spent 15 years over in Mill Creek Township. And the experience there I thought would be useful for the listeners to hear. We had issues. It was a small township. It had mixed use, pretty large farms there, and there were also people with country houses and you know, just people of all sorts. We had one quarry. The quarry had its usual quarry issues with the neighbors. They, you know, had well problems and dust problems and asphalt fume problems, all that. It's a pretty big quarry. It had its zoning from long ago. Then another quarry wanted to come in and move right next door to it. Of course, one of the landowners was going to make a lot to sell land to that quarry, but they had to get zoning. So there was a brouhaha in the zoning committee, the people who were against the second quarry, thinking it would be just more trouble, were defeated, and that second quarry zoning was approved. Then others of us got together in a most democratic way, formed a committee to have a referendum. It was a small enough township we could do that without a lot of trouble, get the signatures, put it on the next ballot, and actually we overturned that. And the after that happened, the quarry powers that be decided to talk to our committee. And what we wanted to do was actually change our zoning code so that instead of having 500 acres, which essentially when they're doing 10 acres a year of stone, that gives them a whole lot of years of which they don't need you or your approval, and limit that to only zoning them 50 mm-hmm. acres at a time. That would be about 5 years worth of quarry. And it changed the entire attitude. We actually overturned it, got our new zoning in, and the second quarry went away and actually ended up the former quarry got a lot more user-friendly for people and started listening to them. And then a funny thing happened. Some years later, I happened to see a bill that the quarry people had put through where they wanted to pull, and this is in the Ohio legislature, they wanted to pull all local zoning out of the township hands, which would just be giving them free rein to do just what they wanted and, you know, basically the heck with anybody who lived nearby. Okay. But the way it was a nice balance. It felt very Jeffersonian, and I thought it was a wonderful experience, and, you know, I'm proud of our township at that time.
Thanks for calling, Andy. That's a good example of that sense of local control, LaVia. Are you concerned at all about losing that?
I think there are many ways to maintain that kind of local control, and it doesn't necessarily have to be through a township form of government. But I'm not concerned about that.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a few more minutes left. We're talking about pros and cons of regionalization and consolidation with Matt DeTemple of the Ohio Township Association and also LaVia Brockman of the Brookings Institute. Coming up after this segment, we'll be talking about a proposal to repeal Ohio's estate tax. It's House Bill 3. We're going to talk to one of the sponsors of that bill, so you can queue up for that as well. LaVia, you talk about a medium-range goal in your report of aligning state economic development program boundaries with metropolitan regions, and it made me wonder, are you talking about something like MORPC, the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission, something like that, or what do you mean by that?
Well, that recommendation was more focused on state-level agencies, and there are a couple things with that. One, the different state departments that have agencies, regional agencies in the field around the state.
Like ODOT, ODNR.
Right. Okay. Transportation, Department of Development, right. They, for the most part, all have different regional designations. And what we would like to see is that they align those, because it's very confusing for for folks, for Ohioans and folks out in the field. And it would be much, and it would greatly increase efficiencies. So that was one of the things that's what we were referring to with that recommendation.
Matt, from your point of view, I know that Friday is the deadline for your 2011 Ohio Township Association sign up. And is the topic of consolidation and regionalism on the agenda there?
You're talking about our winter conference
right.
That's coming up. By the way, that's going to be February 9th to 12th at the Columbus Convention Center, if I can slip in a plug.
Sure.
Yes. We have over 60, workshops there, so I don't have them all committed to memory mm-hmm. over the course of the 3 days, but absolutely it'll be a topic of discussion there. It'll be a hot topic among our members because, it's such a hot topic.
And I wanted to go back actually to the caller's example about the quarry.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there are advantages to, that kind of local control and local interaction, but we're talking right now about a dramatic, potentially dramatic change in the landscape where we are dealing with an $8 billion budget deficit, give or take, depending on how you, at the state level, depending on how you analyze that. And there could be some serious loss of services. So I think that the example of the quarry is will be fairly low on the totem pole when we're talking about basic services that if they're not treated through some kind of shared collaborative collaboration between different governments may go away altogether, whether it's mental health or other kinds of services. So we've got to look at the seriousness of our financial situation and what a local government is actually costing us these days.
The local government fund's been taking hits for years, probably since the early 90s to some extent, and then mm-hmm. They've been ratcheting it up in the last decade. Clearly, it's going to take I don't know. I'm not in on the conversation, but I would imagine it's going to take another big hit. And mm-hmm. LaVia makes the point that you have some imminent funding issues at hand. How much are you talking about those, Matt?
A lot. The local government fund, it got changed a few years ago, the formula, so that now it's a percentage of the state budget. So it's 3.68%. And one of the dynamics, that's happened recently is as the state budget overall has shrunk in size because of the economy, so has the local government fund. So it's been cut, just due to the nature of the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as we wade into this next, budget process that's about to get started, sure, we're expecting that the LGF will probably be on the table and probably will be cut again. But there are a number of things. I mean, we've told our members that to expect that, and people out there are sort of braced for that. But, there are some things, as I mentioned earlier, we are in favor of collaboration. There was the Local Government Commission on Reform and Collaboration. They came out with a report. There's been a lot of reports recently. And one of the things that commission discovered is if you look at the Ohio Revised Code, scattered throughout it are some examples that permit collaboration among local government entities, but there's not a general grant of authority. And so that was one of the commission's recommendations is why don't we modify Ohio law to plug in a general grant of authority for all local government entities to collaborate? And as an association, that's something we're in favor of.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. And Nancy from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that nobody's going to move to a township to avoid city taxes because you pay city taxes where you work before you pay where you live, and so you'd have to work and live in a township to avoid city taxes.
Well, I think that the income tax, though, you would pay where you live.
You pay where you work first, and then the cities have agreements that some of them will give you credit for paying where you worked, and then some of them will still make you pay a little bit where you live.
Well, it just depends on what their tax rates are.
Yeah.
And most of them eventually get realigned. There's been a realignment in the last couple years, really.
Yeah, but you'd have to live and work in a township to avoid city taxes.
That's true. I mean, I do think some people are drawn to townships. I mean, if you look at Ohio's population patterns, I mean, the areas that are growing are townships. I mean, it's the fastest growing.
Because they tend to be more rural, and that's where the growth is going to occur?
Well, it's quality of life. I mean, you know, it's the fact that there's no income tax. It's the fact that, you know, about half of the townships in Ohio have zoning. And, you know, so they may, in their zoning plan, say, you know, we're going to control density. We're not going to, you know, and so housing may be a little more spread out. So it's quality of life issues. And, you know, the other thing we find is, you know, there's economic development that's going on in the townships.
But I think we would argue that that kind of growth, that which we would refer to as sprawl, is really the kind of unsustainable growth in Ohio that we can't afford anymore, and that we're imposing new infrastructure costs. We need to really reinvest in our current infrastructure. We've advocated for a long time this what we call fix it first. We need to go back and fix the infrastructure we own in this state first, which are primarily in you know, urban and
before building the new
before
roads,
before building
and the
new
big
roads,
fancy interchanges
we are imposing huge new costs on ourselves, tax and otherwise, with this.
Well, you see that a lot in school districts where people move to school districts where there's a low tax rate, and then as they pile onto that district, eventually they have to ask them for a tax increase, a levy increase, because they can't afford to educate their children at that rate. People get mad. They say, well, I moved here because it's cheap. Why should I have to do that? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Meanwhile, we've emptied out where we used to live. You know, our cities look like donuts. Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about.
We have to take another break before we move our conversation on. I want to thank our guests. Obviously, this isn't something you wrap up in 40 minutes. No illusions there. So I hope that you'll join us again, Livia Brockman, and we can continue the conversation.
Thanks very much. Enjoyed being here.
And also Matt DeTemple of the Ohio Township Association. Matt, thanks for joining us. I imagine we'll be talking again down the road.
Thanks, Ann.
Okay. When we return, we will be talking with the sponsor of House Bill 3, which would eliminate Ohio's estate tax, and also the deputy director of the Ohio Municipal League on the same topic. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, surgeon and journalist Atul Gawande. His article suggesting higher spending on health care doesn't lead to better outcomes caught President Obama's eye a year and a half ago. His latest piece in the New Yorker looks at efforts to drive down costs by providing better care to chronically ill patients. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at WOSU.org/email.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. CCAD offers continuing education classes where you can update your creative career skills. Classes start January 31st. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
29 degrees currently in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, a high of 31 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight, and a low of 19. And then a winter weather advisory goes into effect tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We'll see snow throughout the day on Thursday, maybe 3 inches of accumulation, a high of 28 degrees. And the snow continues Thursday night with a low of 13. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A bill introduced in the Ohio House a little over a week ago would eliminate Ohio's estate tax. Local governments rely in part on the revenue from estate taxes. If the tax is repealed, what would replace the funding source? Joining us today, Representative Jay Hottinger. Representative Hottinger is a Republican from Newark. He is the co-sponsor of the legislation to repeal the tax. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Great to be with you.
Also joining us is John Mahoney. He's deputy director of the Ohio Municipal League. Welcome to the program, John.
Thanks, Ann. Hi, Jake.
Hi, John.
So estate tax repeal might make Ohio look better as a state, but it could also make Ohio's hometowns do less or tax more. That wouldn't necessarily be reform in some people's eyes. Some call it a shell game. Representative Hottinger?
Well, first off, let me say, 30 states don't have an estate tax, and so we're just one of 20 states that do, and we're just one of two that actually shares those revenues with local entities, local governments, Pennsylvania, our neighbor, being the other. And, the federal government starts taxing someone's estates at $5 million. Most states don't start taxing until $1 million, $2.5 million, $3.5 million. And here in Ohio, we start taxing you upon your death at $338,000. And I think it's an extremely unfair and egregious tax, because it taxes you on something you've already been taxed on before, at least once and sometimes even twice.
John, is it fair?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the league has never had a position in it that we're opposed to that particular tax policy.
Mm-hmm.
Our concern is, okay, if you do away with it, how do you help local governments continue to provide the services they're providing? When you do away with a resource that not all communities, but many communities have relied on for decades, it's a jolt to the system when our members have had very tough budgets for the last 8 to 10 years. We didn't have a statewide recession; we had an everywhere recession. And our budgets and layoffs and attrition through our staff, we've done everything we can to pare down, and our people continue to pare down their expenses and you have to remember we're in tough times. We're an income tax base. If you're a municipality, you for the most part rely on income taxes, and employment's been the big lagging drag mm-hmm. on our economy.
Representative, what about something in between, increasing the the exemption, raising that up into the $1 million range, for instance, to compete better with those states?
Well, I think there's a couple things, Ann. First off, at $338,000, I think we can all argue that that's certainly, or maybe even agree, that that certainly is starting to hit middle-class families. You're hitting small business owners, you're hitting farmers. Ohio Farm Bureau is supportive of this because many farmers are, cash poor but land wealthy. And so at that very low level, we're not just talking about wealthy individuals. We're talking about middle-class individuals. So if you raise it to, up to the federal limit of $5 million, or go to the $2.5 or $3.5 million where the other handful of states are that continue to have this, that's certainly progress. But it doesn't do anything to help, those that have great wealth. And there are a number of lifelong Buckeyes who literally on their deathbed have left the state. You think of people like Dave Thomas of Wendy's, or even the late Senator Howard Metzenbaum. These are people and many, many others in all of our local communities that leave the state of Ohio on their deathbeds because of this egregious tax. And it's not just the sun. It's not just the Gulf that draws Ohioans down to Florida or Arizona. It's this tax. And so, yes, you can raise the exemption, and that will have impact on less Ohioans and have a less impact on the middle class, but it certainly wouldn't do anything to stop the exodus of those extraordinarily wealthy individuals who happen to be many times great philanthropists in our communities.
They also happen to often be residents of the communities that benefit the most from the estate tax. Upper Arlington, Worthington, Bexley, high wealth communities. So on one hand, you're benefiting individuals. On the other hand, the communities where they live are going to be hit very hard. What Is there any feedback from your constituents on that score, Representative?
Well, and I would say also that, you know, their communities are already hit when we're forcing those residents from Granville or Bexley or Upper Arlington or you name the community, mm-hmm. when we're forcing them to leave the state. I spoke with a constituent of mine last week, and where is he today? He's in Florida. Now, yes, it may be because of weather, but he's also now official resident of the state of Florida, and there are more and more people who are doing that. And so I'm sensitive. I come, as John knows, I come from a local government background, as does Representative Cheryl Grossman, my other joint sponsor on this piece of legislation. She was
Grove
mayor
City.
Of Grove City.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm certainly sympathetic and sensitive, but I'm more sympathetic and sensitive to the hardworking Ohioans who are seeing their estates taxed once again. And so I would argue that local governments have probably unjustly or unfairly benefited from this tax for too many years. I do think that this should be part of a local government structural reform. I think there are other things that we can be doing, but, you know, coming from a local government background, and I would argue that betting on how many people in your municipality are going to die or who's going to die in any given year is really not sound budgeting. And so this is something that I think is really going to improve the economic climate in the state and will allow us to be able to recognize the contribution of successful Ohioans and keep them here and stop the exodus to a number of other states.
How many people are we talking about? How many communities rely heavily? How many municipalities, John, would be hurt hard by the loss of the estate tax?
That's hard to say. I can give you the top 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But what happens? Smaller communities like villages probably not a big effect. Some townships. Would be affected in a big way, but what happens? It's two categories of cities. It's as you mentioned, it's often wealthier communities, and then it's our big cities, places like Cincinnati, and it isn't evenly distributed. But places like Cincinnati, it's about 7.5% of their general revenue fund, which if you take 7.5% out of a fund in 1 year, it's a pretty serious hit. Columbus, even though it's twice the size of Cincinnati, gets about $5.5 million. Cleveland gets quite a bit, and the counties are different too. I mean, how much goes into all the local governments? Which is the townships, the villages, and the cities. Places like Hamilton County, I think Hamilton County is the highest at $62 million, Cuyahoga at $50 million. And then you get Franklin, which is the biggest county, gets $29 million. So it's a wide spread, and it's, in some cases, you know, I'm sure there's villages in Jay's district. He'll never hear from on this issue, except as a matter, maybe as a matter of principle, but not as a matter of finances.
But, and Ann, also keep in mind what we're talking about statewide, you know, because the state keeps 20% of the estate, so it's about $16 million a year impact on the state budget. To all the local government entities, we're looking at an average of about $240 million a year. Mm-hmm. And so, again, if this is... If municipalities and townships are using this as, you know, kind of the icing on the cake, you know, and that this is something that's unexpected, because it's not really a reliable, it's
right.
not something you can budget on. You can't put it into your budget because you don't know who's going to die. You know, last year there were 110,000 people that died in Ohio, and just 8,000 people's estates were taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly there were a lot more people whose estates reached that 338,000 threshold, but they made other arrangements or had, you know, again, moved to one of these other 30 states that don't tax them.
So, we're facing an $8 billion shortfall or somewhere in that neighborhood, Representative. The local government fund likely will be hit again. Passing a tax, you know, eliminating a tax like this at the same time, is this the right time to do it?
Well, I mean, we can always have the argument of, you know, when is the best time. I certainly think it's the most fundamentally unfair and the most egregious tax that's in the state of Ohio. And so I would argue that it's long overdue. Again, Ann, we're going to try to do all we can to most of us come from a local government background, so we're going to do all that we can to try to minimize that impact on the local government fund. But I do think that we need to be looking at, on a much more comprehensive level, some local government structural reform and some things that we can help local governments do. Are there ways that we can incentivize them to do some consolidation of services? Are there things that we can do on prevailing wage or collective bargaining that help them on the expense side of the equation? And so I really do think that the way government, both on the state and local level, how we deliver services in the future is going to be changing, and I think that this should be part of that equation.
Right. I mean, those changes, though, that you're talking about and the reforms you're talking about, and we were just talking about possibilities in the earlier part of the program, those come in time. Those come after lots of discussions. What you're proposing in House Bill 3 is a retroactive. It would be retroactive to January 1st. It would be immediate.
Well, and it's retroactive, but keep in mind that the average estate takes 18 to 24 months to close out, okay? And so someone who dies, yes, in 2011, their estate will not be subject to the estate tax, but local governments are still going to be receiving throughout all of 2011 and throughout probably the entirety of 2012 revenues, because it takes that long for estates to settle for people who have died in the past, you know, 15 to 18 months.
So John Mahoney, from the Ohio Municipal League, how do municipalities, townships, how do they plan for these kind of things? They don't put the hoped for revenue in their budgets. What do they tend to use it for if they can't count on it?
Well, different ways. And let me say it's a steadier source of revenue for any city of size than I think what's been portrayed here. Can I answer one of your other questions?
Sure.
This would be the worst time to do it.
Okay.
So I disagree with you, as you might expect. It's budgeted in different ways. Some communities, they have a list of needed capital improvements, and they might get through the whole list. They might dedicate the estate tax to that, and they might get through some of those lists one year and other projects the following year, depending on who dies. And then others, they simply know. I mean, if you go back 5 years, the dollars, when I was in Springfield, I think on the city commission, we always, and this has been years ago, we always counted on $500,000. And that's about what we always got. So it depends. It's a steadier revenue than you might think. Even the state acknowledges that because the state says it'll cost us $60 million a year.
It ranges between $54 and $72 million with an average of $60
million,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I guess the lag time that Jay mentioned, I think we ought to be cautious of that because OVM, you know, when we do budgets and somebody says, let's do away with the estate tax, which we've not had a substantive argument, but we've had some discussions on that over the years. They say this is going to cost the biennium budget this much money.
Okay.
So that lag time's never been taken into account with OVM.
Okay. Representative?
And can I just interject just one second here? Because I think it's important for us to recognize that it shouldn't be about being the government's money. It's the money of the hardworking Ohioans, those small businesses, those farmers who have worked hard, lived here their whole entire life, paid taxes. And keep in mind, we have no idea the amount of money that on the impact on local communities that it has by forcing these successful Ohioans to leave the state when they don't desire to do so. They have a great impact on philanthropy. They're spending in local stores. They're making contributions to charities, and so we can't put a dollar amount on it. But certainly, when I have residents who I can tell you today who are in Florida and Arizona who would rather be in Ohio and living here and participating with their local community where they've lived their entire life, that has a certain economic impact as well in local communities.
Maria?
No, I think yes. That's part of the substantial
discussion. Are you there?
Yeah, hang on. I'm sorry, John?
Yeah, I think that's part of the substantial discussion we'll get into. We, in the past, somebody puts a bill in and maybe it gets a hearing and you know, we haven't gone much farther than that. You wouldn't disagree with that, would you, Jay?
Absolutely not.
And if we're going to get into a substantial discussion, Jay brings out a lot of good issues that are going to have to be a part of it. We certainly look forward to being part of it because I think we have a story to tell about how do you balance that against how do you balance maybe 80,000 taxpayers paying a tax and imposing real damage on local services for hundreds of thousands of Ohioans?
But, John, the reason why it's 8,000 and not much higher, again, there were many more Ohioans who died last year that had estates worth more than $338,000. But again, you're the more wealth that you have, the more likely you're going to be able to find loopholes. You're going to be able to shift assets. You're actually going to move. And so, you know, who gets hit by this really are the middle class people. The very wealthy people are making arrangements for the most part. They're making arrangements so that they're avoiding this 7% tax on their assets upon their death.
And we agreed in the past when we went from 60-40 from a 60-40 split to an 80-20 to raise the threshold, and I think that ought to be part of the discussion.
Let's introduce Maria from Clintonville. You're on the air, Maria.
Thank you.
What's your comment?
Well, first a question, then if you don't mind, a comment.
Briefly. We're running out of time, and I know you've been waiting a long time.
Yes, ma'am. I was wondering, the representative from Newark, how many people in his district actually are subject to this tax, aside from himself?
Representative Hottinger, do you know?
Well, I'm not subject to the tax because I've not reached that.
Because you're a state lawmaker.
But I will tell you, Marie, I don't know the numbers. I have a printout. I don't have that in front of me. But I will tell you that all of us, I spoke with a constituent the other day, said, I don't know of anybody that's left the state because of this. And I said, well, you're really being naive because many of our leading founding families and all of our communities, you may not know that they've left because they're still here. They still own homes here. They still reside here, but they have transferred their residency to another state. And so the number is significant. And again, the biggest impact of 338,000 is a lot of farmers.
Well, what about a graduated a reduction of the estate tax over time, a graduated elimination of it, Representative?
Look, that's something that I think that could be on the table, and I certainly would consider. Again, I think it's an unfair and egregious tax now, and so I would favor, you know, an outright. But if it's something we do over, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years, I think that's something that can be on the table.
Yeah, and I think trying to figure out what to commit something like that just after you've introduced the bill, I don't think anybody would do that. I mean, there is a negotiating process that goes on here.
Okay. That's just about all the time we have. I want to thank my guests, Representative Jay Hottinger, Republican from Newark. Representative, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
And also John Mahoney, Deputy Director of the Ohio Municipal League. John, glad you could be with us today.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks, Jay.
Sorry we couldn't get to all of our callers, but I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank all the help that puts this show on every day as well. The All Sides staff includes producer Linda Taylor, associate producer Amy Jurovich, student production assistant Jeff Steiner, WOSU radio intern Leticia Wiggins, radio operations director Kevin Petrilla, senior broadcast technician Eric French, and our music was composed by Alan DeCenzo. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides on WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.